The girl in Vin's arms cringed as a Koloss howl sounded, and Vin spun, flaring her tin to keep herself from falling unconscious from her fatigue. The creatures weren't following, however. They were arguing over a bit of clothing the dead man had been wearing. The howl sounded again, and this time Vin realized it had come from another direction. People began to scream again. Vin looked up, only to find those she'd just rescued facing down an even larger group of Koloss.
"No!"
Vin said, raising a hand. But they'd run far while she'd been fighting. She wouldn't even have been able to see them, save for her tin. As it was, she was able to see painfully well as the creatures began to lay into the small group with their thick-bladed swords.
"No!"
Vin screamed again, the deaths startling her, shocking her, standing as a reminder of all the deaths she'd been unable to prevent.
"No, no, no!"
Pewter gone, steel gone, iron gone. She had nothing. Or, she had one thing. Not even pausing to think on what prompted her to use it, she threw a Duralumin-enhanced soothing at the beasts. It was as if her mind had slammed into something, and then that something shattered. Vin skidded to a halt, shocked, child still in her arms as the Koloss stopped, frozen in their horrific act of slaughter. "What did I just do?" she thought, tracing through her muddled mind, trying to connect why she had reacted as she had. Was it because she had been frustrated? No. She knew that the Lord Ruler had built the Inquisitors with a weakness. Remove a particular spike from their back and they'd die. He had also built the Chondra with a weakness. The Koloss had to have a weakness too.
"Tensun called the Koloss his cousins," she thought.
She stood upright, the dark street suddenly quiet save for the whimpering ska. The Koloss waited, and she could feel herself in their minds, as if they were an extension of her own body, the same thing she had felt when she'd taken control of Tensun's body.
Cousins, indeed.
The Lord Ruler had built the Koloss with a weakness, the same weakness as the Chondra. He had given himself a way to keep them in check. And suddenly she understood how he'd controlled them all those long years. Sazed stood at the head of his large band of refugees, Snow and Ash, the two now indistinguishable in the misty darkness, falling around him. Ham sat to one side looking drowsy. He'd lost too much blood. A man without pewter would have died by now. Someone had given Sazed a cloak, but he had used it to wrap the comatose breeze. Even though he barely tapped his brass mind for warmth, Sazed himself wasn't cold. Maybe he was just getting too numb to care. He held two hands up before him, forming fists, 10 rings sparkling against the light of the group's single lantern. Koloss approached from the dark alleyways, their forms huddled shadows in the night. Sazed's soldiers backed away. There was little hope left in them. Sazed alone stood in the quiet snow, a spindly, bald scholar nearly naked. He, the one who had preached the religions of the fallen. He who had given up hope at the end. He who should have had the most faith of all. 10 rings. A few minutes of power. A few minutes of life. He waited as the Koloss gathered. The beasts grew strangely silent in the night. They stopped approaching. They stood still, a line of dark, mound-like silhouettes in the night.
"Why don't they attack?" Sazed thought, frustrated.
A child whimpered. Then the Koloss began to move again. Sazed tensed, but the creatures didn't walk forward. They split, and a quiet figure walked through the center of them.
"Lady Vin?" Sazed asked.
He still hadn't had a chance to speak with her since she'd saved him at the gate. She looked exhausted.
"Sazed," she said tiredly, "you lied to me about the Well of Ascension." "Yes, Lady Vin," he said. "That isn't important now," she said. "Why are you standing naked outside of the keep's walls?"
He looked up at the Koloss.
"Lady Vin, I..."
"Penrod!" Vin shouted suddenly. "Is that you up there?"
The king appeared. He looked as confused as Sazed felt.
"Open your gates," Vin yelled. Are you mad? Penrod yelled back.
I'm not sure, Vin said.
She turned, and a group of Kolos moved forward, walking quietly as if commanded. The largest one picked Vin up, holding her up high until she was nearly level with the top of the keep's low wall. Several guards atop the wall shied away from her.
I'm tired, Penrod, Vin said.
Sazed had to tap his hearing tin mind to listen in on her words.
We are all tired, child, Penrod said.
I'm particularly tired, Vin said. I'm tired of the games. I'm tired of people dying because of arguments between their leaders. I'm tired of good men being taken advantage of.
Penrod nodded quietly.
I want you to gather our remaining soldiers, Vin said, turning to look over the city. How many do you have in there?
About 200, he said.
Vin nodded.
The city is not lost. The Kolos have fought against the soldiers, but haven't had much time to turn on the population itself. I want you to send out your soldiers to find any groups of Kolos that are pillaging or killing. Protect the people, but don't attack the Kolos if you can help it. Send a messenger from me instead.
Remembering Penrod's bullheadedness earlier, Sazed thought the man might object. He didn't. He just nodded.
What do we do then? Penrod asked.
I'll take care of the Kolos, Vin said. We'll go reclaim Keep Venture first. I'm going to need more medals, and there are plenty stored there. Once the city is secure, I want you and your soldiers to put out those fires. It shouldn't be too hard. There aren't a lot of buildings left that can burn.
Very well, Penrod said, turning to call out his orders.
Sazed watched in silence as the massive Kolos lowered Vin to the ground. It stood quietly, as if it were a monster hewn of stone, and not a breathing, bleeding, living creature.
Sazed, Vin said softly.
He could sense the fatigue in her voice.
Lady Vin, Sazed said.
To the side, Ham finally shook himself out of his stupor, looking up in shock as he noticed Vin and the Kolos. Vin continued to look at Sazed, studying him. Sazed had trouble meeting her eyes. But she was right. They could talk about his betrayal later. There were other, more important tasks that had to be accomplished.
I realize you probably have work for me to do, Sazed said, breaking the silence. But might I instead be excused? There is a task I wish to perform.
Of course, Sazed, Vin said.
But first, tell me, do you know if any of the others survived?
Clubs and Duxon are dead, my lady, Sazed said. I have not seen their bodies, but the reports were from reliable sources. You can see that Lord Hammond is here with us, though he has suffered a very bad wound.
Breeze? She asked.
Sazed nodded to the lump that lay huddled beside the wall.
He lives, thankfully. His mind, however, appears to be reacting poorly to the horrors he saw. It could simply be a form of shock. Or it could be something more lasting.
Vin nodded, turning to Ham.
Ham, I need pewter.
He nodded dully, pulling out a vial with his good hand. He tossed it to her. Vin downed it, and immediately her fatigue seemed to lessen. She stood up straighter, her eyes becoming more alert.
That can't be healthy, Sazed thought with worry. How much of that has she been burning?
Step more energetic, she turned to walk toward her Kolos.
Lady Vin?
Sazed asked, causing her to turn around.
There is still an army out there.
Oh, I know,
Vin said, turning to take one of the large, wedge-like Kolos swords from its owner. It was actually a few inches taller than she was.
I am well aware of Straff's intentions, she said, hefting the sword up onto her shoulder.
Then she turned to the snow and mist, walking toward Keep Venture, her strange Kolos guards tromping after her. It took Sazed well into the night to complete his self-appointed task. He found corpse after corpse in the frigid night, many of them iced over. The snow had stopped falling and the wind had picked up, hardening the slush to slick ice. He had to break some of the corpses free to turn them over and inspect their faces. Without his brass mind to provide heat, he could never have performed his grisly job. Even so, he had found himself some warmer clothing, a simple brown robe and a set of boots. He continued working through the night, the wind swirling flakes of snow and ice around him. He started at the gate, of course. That was where the most corpses were. However, he eventually had to move into alleyways and thoroughfares. He found her body sometime near morning. The city had stopped burning. The only light he had was his lantern, but it was enough to reveal the strip of fluttering cloth in a snowbank. At first, Sazed thought it was just another bloodied bandage that had failed in its purpose. Then he saw a glimmer of orange and yellow, and he moved closer. He no longer had the strength to rush, and reached into the snow. Tyndall's body cracked slightly as he rolled it out. The blood on her side was frozen, of course, and her eyes were iced open. Judging from the direction of her flight, she had been leading her soldiers to keep venture.
"Oh, Tyndall," he thought, reaching down to touch her face. It was still soft, but dreadfully cold.
After years of being abused by the breeders, after surviving so much, she had found this. Death in a city where she hadn't belonged, with a man, no, a half-man, who did not deserve her. He released his brass mind and let the night's cold wash over him. He didn't want to feel warm at the moment. His lantern flickered uncertainly, illuminating the street, shadowing the icy corpse. There, in that frozen alleyway of Luthadel, looking down at the corpse of the woman he loved, Sazed realized something. He didn't know what to do. He tried to think of something proper to say, something proper to think. But suddenly all of his religious knowledge seemed hollow. What was the use in giving her a burial? What was the value in speaking the prayers of a long-dead god? What good was he? The religion of Dadrada hadn't helped clubs. The survivor hadn't come to rescue the thousands of soldiers who had died. What was the point? None of Sazed's knowledge gave him comfort. He accepted the religions he knew, believed in their value, but that didn't give him what he needed. They didn't assure him that Tyndall's spirit still lived. Instead, they made him question. If so many people believed so many different things, how could any one of them, or even anything at all, actually be true? The Ska called Sazed holy, but at that moment he realized that he was the most profane of men. He was a creature who knew 300 religions, yet had faith in none of them. So when his tears fell, and nearly began to freeze to his face, they gave him as little comfort as his religions. He moaned, leaning over the frozen corpse.
"My life," he thought, "has been a sham."
"Rashik is to try and lead Elendi in the wrong direction, to discourage him or otherwise foil his quest. Elendi doesn't know that he has been deceived, that we've all been deceived, and he will not listen to me now."
55. Straff woke in the cold morning and immediately reached for a leaf of black frayne. He was beginning to see the benefits of his addiction. It woke him quickly and easily, making his body feel warm despite the early hour. When he might have once taken an hour to get ready, he was up in minutes, dressed, prepared for the day. And glorious that day would be. Jarnarl met him outside his tent, and the two walked through the bustling camp. Straff's boots cracked on half-ice, half-snow as he made his way to his horse.
"The fires are out, my lord," Jarnarl explained. "Probably due to the snows. The Kolos probably finished their rampaging and took shelter from the cold. Our scouts are afraid to get too close, but they say the city is like a graveyard. Quiet and empty,
save for the bodies.
Maybe they actually killed each other off,
Straff said cheerfully, climbing into his saddle, breath puffing in the crisp morning air. Around him the army was forming up. 50,000 soldiers, eager at the prospect of taking the city. Not only was there plundering to be done, but moving into Luthadel would mean roofs and walls for all of them. Perhaps, Gennaro said, mounting.
Wouldn't that be convenient, Straff thought with a smile. All of my enemies dead. The city and its riches mine, and no scar to worry about.
My lord, someone cried.
Straff looked up. The field between his camp and Luthadel was colored gray and white, the snow stained by ash. And gathering on the other side of that field were Kolos.
Looks like they are alive after all, my lord, Gennaro said.
Indeed, Straff said, frowning.
There were still a lot of the creatures. They piled out of the western gate, not attacking immediately, instead gathering in a large body.
Scout counts say there are fewer of them than there were, Gennaro said after a short time. Perhaps two-thirds their original number, maybe a bit fewer. But they are Kolos.
But they're abandoning their fortifications, Straff said, smiling,
black frain warming his blood, making him feel like he was burning metals.
And they're coming to us. Let them charge. This should be over quickly.
Yes, my lord, Gennaro said, sounding a little less certain.
He frowned, then, pointing toward the southern section of the city,
My lord?
What now?
Soldiers, my lord, Gennaro said.
Human ones. Looks to be several thousand of them.
Straff frowned.
They should all be dead.
The Kolos charged. Straff's horse shuffled slightly as the blue monsters ran across the gray field, the human troops falling into more organized ranks behind.
Archers! Gennaro shouted. Prepare first volley!
Perhaps I shouldn't be at the front, Straff thought suddenly.
He turned his horse, then noticed something. An arrow suddenly shot from the midst of the charging Kolos. But Kolos didn't use bows. Besides, the monsters were still far away, and that object was far too big to be an arrow anyway. A rock, perhaps? It seemed larger than... It began to fall down toward Straff's army. Straff stared into the sky, riveted by the strange object. It grew more distinct as it fell. It wasn't an arrow, nor was it a rock. It was a person.
A person with a flapping mist cloak.
No!
Straff yelled.
She's supposed to be gone.
Vin screamed down from her Duralumin-fueled steel jump, massive Kolos sword light in her hands. She hit Straff directly in the head with the sword, then continued on downward, slamming into the ground, throwing up snow and frozen dirt with the power of her impact. The horse fell into two pieces, front and back. What remained of the former king slid to the ground with the equine corpse. She looked at the remnants, smiled grimly, and bid Straff farewell. Elend had, after all, warned him what would happen if he attacked the city. Straff's generals and attendants stood around her in a stunned circle. Behind her, the Kolos army barreled forward, confusion in Straff's ranks making the archer volleys ragged and less effective. Vin kept a tight hold on her sword, then pushed outward with a Duralumin-enhanced steel push. Riders were thrown, their beasts tripped by their shoes, and soldiers sprayed backward from her in a circle of several dozen yards. Men screamed. She downed another vial, restoring both steel and pewter. Then she jumped up, seeking out generals and other officers to attack. As she moved, her Kolos troops hit the front ranks of Straff's army, and the real carnage began.
"What are they doing?"
Set asked, hurriedly throwing on his cloak as he was placed and tied into his saddle.
"Attacking, apparently,"
said Bauman, one of his aides.
"Look! They're working with the Kolos!"
Set frowned, doing up his cloak clasp.
"A treaty? With Kolos?" Bauman asked.
Set shrugged.
"Who's going to win?" "No way to tell, my lord," the man said. "Kolos are..."
"What is this?"
Aurianne demanded, riding up the snowy incline, accompanied by a couple of abashed guards. Set had, of course, ordered them to keep her in the camp, but he had also, of course, expected that she'd get past them eventually.
At least I can count on her to be slowed down by getting ready in the morning, he thought with amusement. She wore one of her dresses, immaculately arranged, her hair done. If a building were burning down, Orianne would still pause to do her makeup before escaping.
Looks like the battle has begun, Set said, nodding toward the fighting.
Outside the city?
Orianne asked, riding up next to him. Then she brightened.
They're attacking Straff's position.
Yes, Set said. And that leaves the city...
We have to help them, father.
Set rolled his eyes.
You know we're going to do nothing of the sort. We'll see who wins. If they're weak enough, which I hope they will be, we'll attack them. I didn't bring all of my forces back with me, but maybe...
He trailed off as he noticed the look in Orianne's eyes. He opened his mouth to speak, but before he could do so, she kicked her horse into motion. Her guards cursed, dashing forward, too late, to try and grab her reins. Set sat stunned. This was a little insane, even for her. She wouldn't dare. She galloped down the hill toward the battle. Then she paused, as he had expected. She turned, looking back at him.
"If you want to protect me, father," she yelled, "you'd better charge."
With that, she turned and started galloping again, her horse throwing up puffs of snow. Set didn't move.
"My lord," Bauman said, "those forces look almost evenly matched. 50,000 against a force of some 12,000 kolos and about 5,000 men. If we were to add our strength to either side..."
"Damn fool girl," he thought, watching Orianne gallop away.
"My lord?" Bauman asked.
"Why did I come to Luthadel in the first place? Was it because I really thought I could take the city? Without allomancers? With my homeland in revolt? Or was it because I was looking for something? A confirmation of the stories? A power like I saw on that night when the air almost killed me? How exactly did they get the Kolos to fight with them, anyway?"
"Gather our forces," Set commanded. "We're marching to the defense of Luthadel. And somebody send riders after that fool daughter of mine."
Sazed rode quietly, his horse moving slowly in the snow. Ahead of him, the battle raged, but he was far enough behind it to be out of danger. He'd left the city behind, where Luthadel's surviving women and elderly watched from the walls. Vin had saved them from the Kolos. The real miracle would be to see if she could save them from the other two armies. Sazed didn't ride into the fight. His metal mines were mostly empty, and his body was nearly as tired as his mind. He simply brought his horse to a halt, its breath puffing in the cold as he sat alone on the snowy plain. He didn't know how to deal with Tyndall's death. He felt hollow. He wished that he could just stop feeling. He wished that he could go back and defend her gate instead of his own. Why hadn't he gone in search of her when he'd heard of the northern gate's fall? She'd still been alive then. He might have been able to protect her. Why did he even care anymore? Why bother? But the ones who had faith were right, he thought. Vin came back to defend the city. I lost hope, but they never did. He started his horse forward again. The sounds of battle came in the distance. He tried to focus on anything but Tyndall, but his thoughts kept returning to things he had studied with her. The facts and stories became more precious, for they were a link to her, a painful link, but one he couldn't bear to discard. The hero of ages was not simply to be a warrior, he thought, still riding slowly toward the battlefield. He was a person who united others, who brought them together. A leader. He knew that Vin thought she was the hero, but Tyndall was right. It was too much of a coincidence, and he wasn't even certain what he believed anymore, if anything. The hero of ages was removed from the Terrace people, he thought, watching the Kolos attack. He was not royalty himself, but came to it eventually. Sazed pulled his horse up, pausing in the center of the open, empty field. Arrows stuck from the snow around him, and the ground was thoroughly trampled.
In the distance, he heard a drum. He turned, watching as an army of men marched over a rise to the west. They flew Set's banner. He commanded the forces of the world. Kings rode to his aid. Set's forces joined the battle against Straff. There was a crash of metal against metal, bodies grunting as a new front came under attack. Sazed sat on the field between the city and the armies. Vin's forces were still outnumbered, but as Sazed watched, Straff's army began to pull back. It broke into pieces, its members fighting without direction. Their movements bespoke terror.
"She's killing their generals," he thought.
Set was a clever man. He himself rode to battle, but he stayed near the back of his ranks, his infirmities requiring him to remain tied into his saddle and making it difficult for him to fight. Still, by joining the battle, he ensured that Vin would not turn her Kolos on him. For there was really no doubt in Sazed's mind who would win this conflict. Indeed, before even an hour had passed, Straff's troops began to surrender in large groups. The sounds of battle died down, and Sazed kicked his horse forward.
"Holy First Witness," he thought. "I don't know that I believe that. But either way, I should be there for what happens next."
The Kolos stopped fighting, standing silently. They parted for Sazed as he rode up through their ranks. Eventually he found Vin standing, bloodied, her massive Kolos sword held on one shoulder. Some Kolos pulled a man forward, a lord in rich clothing and a silvery breastplate. They dropped him before Vin. From behind, Penrod approached with an honor guard, led by a Kolos. Nobody spoke. Eventually, the Kolos parted, and this time a suspicious Set rode forward, surrounded by a large group of soldiers and led by a single Kolos. Set eyed Vin, then scratched his chin.
"Not much of a battle," he said.
"Straff's soldiers were afraid," Vin said. "They're cold, and they have no desire to fight Kolos."
"And their leaders?" Set asked.
"I killed them," Vin said. "Except this one. Your name?"
"Lord Janarl," said Straff's man.
His leg appeared broken, and Kolos held him by either arm, supporting him.
"Straff is dead," Vin said. "You control this army now."
The nobleman bowed his head.
"No, I don't. You do."
Vin nodded.
"On your knees," she said.
The Kolos dropped Janarl. He grunted in pain, but then bowed forward.
"I swear my army to you," he whispered.
"No," Vin said sharply. "Not to me. To the rightful heir of House Venture. He is your lord now."
Janarl paused.
"Very well," he said. "Whatever you wish. I swear loyalty to Straff's son, Elend Venture."
The separate groups stood in the cold. Sazed turned as Vin did, looking at Penrod. Vin pointed at the ground. Penrod quietly dismounted, then bowed himself to the ground.
"I swear as well," he said. "I give my loyalty to Elend Venture."
Vin turned to Lord Set.
"You expect this of me?" the bearded man said, amused.
"Yes," Vin said quietly.
"And if I refuse?" Set asked.
"Then I'll kill you," Vin said quietly. "You brought armies to attack my city. You threatened my people. I won't slaughter your soldiers, make them pay for what you did. But I will kill you, Set."
Silence. Sazed turned, looking back at the lines of immobile Kolos, standing in the bloodied snow.
"That is a threat, you know," Set said. "Your own Elend would never stand for such a thing."
"He's not here," Vin said.
"And what do you think he'd say?" Set asked. "He'd tell me not to give in to such a demand. The Honorable Elend Venture would never give in simply because someone threatened his life."
"You're not the man that Elend is," Vin said, "and you know it."
Set paused, Ben smiled. No. No, I'm not. He turned to his aides. Help me down. Ben watched quietly as the guards undid Set's legs, then lifted him down to the snowy ground. He bowed.
Very well, then. I swear myself to Elend Venture. He's welcome to my kingdom, assuming he can take it back from that damn obligator who now controls it.
Vin nodded, turning to Sazed.
I need your help, Sazed. Whatever you command, mistress, Sazed said quietly.
Vin paused.
Please don't call me that. As you wish, Sazed said.
You're the only one here I trust, Sazed,
Vin said, ignoring the three kneeling men.
With Ham wounded and Breeze,
I will do my best, Sazed said, bowing his head. What is it you want me to do?
Secure Luthadel, Vin said. Make certain the people are sheltered and send for supplies from Straff's storehouses. Get these armies situated so that they won't kill each other, then send a squad to fetch Elend. He'll be coming south on the Canal Highway.
Sazed nodded, and Vin turned to the three kneeling kings.
Sazed is my second. You will obey him as you would Elend or myself.
They each nodded in turn.
But where will you be? Penrod asked, looking up.
Vin sighed, suddenly looking terribly weak.
Sleeping, she said, and dropped her sword.
Then she pushed against it, shooting backward into the sky toward Luthadel.
He left ruin in his wake, but it was forgotten, Sazed thought, turning to watch her fly. He created kingdoms, and then destroyed them, as he made the world anew. We had the wrong gender all along.
The end of part 5. Part 6. Words in Steel.
If Rashik fails to lead Elendi astray, then I have instructed the lad to kill Elendi.
56.
How can Vin stand this? Elend wondered. He could barely see 20 feet in the mists. Trees appeared as apparitions around him as he walked, their branches curling around the road. The mist almost seemed to live. It moved, swirled, and blew in the cold night air. It snatched up his puffs of breath, as if drawing a piece of him into it. He shivered and kept walking. The snow had melted patchily over the last few days, leaving heaps in shadowed areas. The canal road, thankfully, was mostly clear. He walked with a pack over his shoulder, carrying only the necessities. At Spook's suggestion, they'd traded their horses at a village several days back. They'd rode the creatures hard the last few days, and it was Spook's estimation that trying to keep them fed and alive for the last leg of their trip to Luthadel wouldn't be worth the effort. Besides, whatever was going to happen at the city had likely already occurred. So Elend walked, alone, in the darkness. Despite the eeriness, he kept his word and traveled only at night. Not only was it Vin's will, but Spook claimed that night was safer. Few travelers braved the mists, therefore most bandits didn't bother watching roadways at night. Spook prowled ahead, his keen senses allowing him to detect danger before Elend blundered into it.
How does that work, anyway? Elend wondered as he walked. Tin is supposed to make you see better, but what does it matter how far you can see if the mists just obscure everything? Writers claimed that allomancy could help a person pierce the mists somehow. Elend had always wondered what that was like. Of course, he had also wondered what it was like to feel the strength of pewter, or to fight with Atium. Allomancers were uncommon, even among great houses. Yet, because of the way Straff had treated him, Elend had always felt guilty that he hadn't been one.
But I ended up as king eventually, even without allomancy, he thought, smiling to himself.
He'd lost the throne, true, but while they could take his crown, they could not take away his accomplishments. He'd proven that an assembly could work. He'd protected the Ska, given them rights and a taste of freedom they'd never forget. He'd done more than anyone would have expected of him. Something rustled in the mists. Elend froze, staring out into the darkness.
Sounds like leaves, he thought nervously. Something moving across them? Or just the wind blowing them?
He decided at that moment that there was nothing more unnerving than staring into the misty darkness, seeing ever-shifting silhouettes. A part of him would rather face down a Koloss army than stand alone at night in an unknown forest.
Elend,
someone whispered. Elend spun. He put a hand to his chest as he saw Spook approaching. He thought about chastising the boy for sneaking up on him, but, well, there wasn't really any other way to approach in the mists.
Did you see something? Spook asked quietly.
Elend shook his head.
But I thought I heard something.
Spook nodded, then darted off into the mists again. Elend stood, uncertain whether he should continue on or just wait. He didn't have to debate for very long. Spook returned a few moments later.
Nothing to worry about, Spook said. Just a mist wraith.
What? Elend asked.
Mist wraith, Spook said. You know, big goopy things, related to Chondra. Don't tell me you haven't read about them.
I have, Elend said, nervously scanning the darkness.
But I never thought I'd be out in the mists with one.
Spook shrugged.
It's probably just following our scent, hoping that we'll leave some trash for it to eat. The things are harmless, mostly.
Mostly? Elend asked.
You probably know more about them than I do. Look, I didn't come back here to chat about scavengers. There's light up ahead.
A village? Elend asked, thinking back to when they'd come this way before. Spook shook his head.
Looks like watchfires.
An army?
Maybe. I'm just thinking you should wait behind for a bit. It could be awkward if you wander into a scout post.
Agreed, Elend said. Spook nodded, then took off into the mists. And Elend was alone in the darkness again. He shivered, pulling his cloak close, and eyed the mists in the direction from which he'd heard the mist wraith. Yes, he'd read about them. He knew they were supposed to be harmless. But the thought of something crawling out there, its skeleton made from random sets of bones, watching him...
Don't focus on that, Elend told himself.
He turned his attention instead to the mists. Vin was right about one thing, at least. They were lingering longer and longer, despite the sunrise. Some mornings they remained a full hour after the sun came up. He could easily imagine the disaster that would befall the land should the mists persist all day. Crops would fail, animals would starve, and civilization would collapse. Could the deepness really be something so simple? Elend's own impressions of the deepness were seated in scholarly tradition. Some writers dismissed the entire thing as a legend, a rumor used by the obligators to enhance their god's aura of divinity. The majority accepted the historical definition of the deepness, a dark monster that had been slain by the Lord Ruler. And yet thinking of it as the mist made some sense. How could a single beast, no matter how dangerous, threaten an entire land? The mists, though, they could be destructive. Kill plants. Perhaps even kill people, as Sazed had suggested. He eyed it, shifting around him, playful, deceptive. Yes, he could see it as the deepness. Its reputation, more frightening than a monster, more dangerous than an army, was one it would deserve. In fact, watching it as he was, he could see it trying to play tricks on his mind. For instance, the mist bank directly in front of him seemed to be forming shapes. Elend smiled as his mind picked out images in the mists. One almost looked like a person standing there in front of him. The person stepped forward. Elend jumped, taking a slight step backward, his foot crunching on a bit of ice-crusted snow.
"Don't be silly," he told himself. "Your mind is playing tricks on you. There's nothing..."
The shape in the mists took another step forward. It was indistinct, almost formless, and yet it seemed real. Random movements in the mists outlined its face, its body, its legs.
"Lord Ruler!"
Elend yelped, jumping back. The thing continued to regard him.
"I'm going mad," he thought, hands beginning to shake.
The mist figure stopped a few feet in front of him, and then raised its right arm and pointed. north, away from Luthadel. Ellen frowned, glancing in the direction the figure pointed. There was nothing but more empty mists. He turned back toward it, but it stood quietly, arm upraised.
Vin spoke of this thing, he remembered, forcing down his fear. She tried to tell me about it, and I thought she was making things up.
She was right. Just as she'd been right about the mists staying longer in the day and the possibility of the mists being the deepness. He was beginning to wonder which of them was the scholar. The mist creature continued to point.
What?
Ellen asked, his own voice sounding haunting in the silent air. It stepped forward, arm still raised. Ellen put a useless hand to his sword, but held his ground.
Tell me what you wish of me, he said forcefully.
The thing pointed again. Ellen cocked his head. It certainly didn't seem threatening. In fact, he felt an unnatural feeling of peace coming from it.
Allomancy, he thought. It's pulling on my emotions.
Ellen, Spook's voice drifted out of the mists. The figure suddenly dissolved, its form melting into the mists. Spook approached, his face dark and shadowed in the night.
Ellen, what were you saying?
Ellen took his hand off his sword, standing upright. He eyed the mists, still not completely convinced that he wasn't seeing things.
Nothing, he said.
Spook glanced back the way he had come.
You should come look at this.
The army? Ellen asked, frowning. Spook shook his head.
No. The refugees.
The keepers are dead, my lord,
the old man said, sitting across from Ellen. He didn't have a tent, only a blanket stretched between several poles.
Either dead or captured.
Another man brought Ellen a cup of warm tea, his demeanor servile. Both wore the robes of stewards, and while their eyes bespoke exhaustion, their robes and hands were clean. Old habits, Ellen thought, nodding thankfully and taking a sip of the tea. Terrace's people might have declared themselves independent, but 1,000 years of servitude cannot be so easily thrown off. The camp was an odd place. Spook said he counted nearly 1,000 people in it, a nightmare of a number to care for, feed, and organize in the cold winter. Many were elderly, and the men were mostly stewards. Eunuchs, bred for genteel service with no experience in hunting.
Tell me what happened, Ellen said.
The elderly steward nodded, his head shaking. He didn't seem particularly frail. Actually, he had that same air of controlled dignity that most stewards exhibited. But his body had a slow, chronic tremble.
The Synod came out into the open, my lord, once the Empire fell.
He accepted a cup of his own, but Ellen noticed that it was only half full, a precaution that proved wise as the elderly steward's shaking nearly spilled its contents.
They became our rulers. Perhaps it was not wise to reveal themselves so soon.
Not all Terrasmen were ferrochemists. In fact, very few were. The keepers, people like Sazed and Tyndall, had been forced into hiding long ago by the Lord Ruler. His paranoia that ferrochemical and allomantic lines might mix, thereby potentially producing a person with his same powers, had led him to try and destroy all ferrochemists.
I've known keepers, friend, Ellen said softly. I find it hard to believe that they could have been easily defeated. Who did this?
Steel Inquisitors, my lord,
the old man said. Ellen shivered.
So that's where they've been.
There were dozens of them, my lord,
the old man said.
They attacked Tathingdwin with an army of Kolos brutes. But that was just a distraction, I think. Their real goal was the Synod and the Keepers themselves. While our army, such as it was, fought the beasts, the Inquisitors themselves struck at the Keepers.
Lord Ruler, Ellen thought, stomach twisting. So what do we do with the book Sazed told us to deliver to the Synod? Do we pass it on to these men or keep it?
They took the bodies with them, my lord, the old man said. Terrace is in ruins, and that is why we are going south. You said you know King Venture?
I have met him, Elend said. He ruled Luthadel, where I am from.
Will he take us in, do you think? The old man asked. We have little hope any more. Tathingdwen was the Terrace capital, but even it wasn't large. We are few these days. The Lord Ruler saw to that.
I do not know if Luthadel can help you, friend.
We can serve well, the old man promised. We were prideful to declare ourselves free, I think. We struggled to survive even before the Inquisitors attacked. Perhaps they did us a favor by casting us out.
Elend shook his head. Kolos attacked Luthadel just over a week ago, he said quietly. I am a refugee myself, Master Steward. For all I know, the city itself has fallen. The old man fell silent.
Ah, I see, he finally said.
I'm sorry, Elend said. I was traveling back to see what happened. Tell me, I traveled this way not long ago. How is it that I missed you in my journey north?
We didn't come by a canal route, my lord, the old man said. We cut across country, straight down, so that we could gather supplies at Suringsheth. You have no further word of events at Luthadel, then? There was a senior keeper in residence there. We were hoping, perhaps, to seek her counsel.
Lady Tyndall? Elend asked. The old man perked up.
Yes. You know her?
She was an attendant at the king's court, Elend said.
Keeper Tyndall could be considered our leader now, I think, the old man said. We aren't certain how many traveling keepers there are, but she is the only known member of the Synod who was out of the city when we were attacked.
She was still in Luthadel when I left, Elend said.
Then she might live still, the old man said. We can hope, I think. I thank you, traveler, for your information. Please make yourself comfortable in our camp.
Elend nodded, rising. Spook stood a short distance away in the mists near a pair of trees. Elend joined him. The people kept large fires burning in the night, as if to defy the mists. The light did some good in dispelling the mists' power, and yet the light seemed to accentuate them as well, creating three-dimensional shadows that bewildered the eye. Spook leaned against the scraggly tree trunk, looking around at things Elend couldn't see. Elend could hear, however, some of what Spook must be inspecting. Crying children, coughing men, shuffling livestock. It doesn't look good, does it? Elend said quietly. Spook shook his head. I wish they'd take down all these fires, he muttered. The light hurts my eyes. Elend glanced to the side. They aren't that bright. Spook shrugged. They're just wasting wood. Forgive them their comfort for now. They'll have little enough of it in the weeks to come. Elend paused, looking over at a passing squad of Terrace soldiers, a group of men who were obviously stewards. Their posture was excellent, and they walked with a smooth grace, but Elend doubted they knew how to use any weapons beyond a cooking knife. No, there is no army in Terrace to help my people. You sent Vin back to gather our allies, Spook said quietly, to bring them up to meet with us, perhaps to seek refuge in Terrace. I know, Elend said. We can't gather in Terrace, though, Spook said. Not with the Inquisitors up there. I know, Elend said again. Spook was silent for a moment. The whole world is falling apart, El, he finally said. Terrace? Luthadel?
Luthadel has not been destroyed, Ellen said, looking sharply at Spook.
The Kolos.
Vin will have found a way to stop them, Ellen said. For all we know, she already found the power at the Well of Ascension. We need to keep going. We can and will rebuild whatever was lost. Then we'll worry about helping Terrace.
Spook paused, then nodded and smiled. Ellen was surprised to see how much his confident words seemed to soothe the boy's concerns. Spook leaned back, eyeing Ellen's still-steaming cup of tea, and Ellen handed it over with a mumble that he didn't like heartroot tea. Spook drank happily. Ellen, however, found matters more troubling than he'd admitted.
The deepness returning, ghosts in the mist, and inquisitors making a play for the Terrace dominance. What else have I been ignoring?
It is a distant hope. Alendi has survived assassins, wars, and catastrophes. And yet I hope that in the frozen mountains of Terrace, he may finally be exposed. I hope for a miracle.
57.
Look, we all know what we need to do, Set said, pounding the table. We've got our armies here ready and willing to fight. Now let's go get my damn country back.
The Empress gave us no command to do such a thing, Gennaro said, sipping his tea, completely unfazed by Set's lack of decorum.
I personally think that we should wait at least until the Emperor returns.
Penrod, the oldest of the men in the room, had enough tact to look sympathetic.
I understand that you are concerned for your people, Lord Set. But we haven't even had a week to rebuild Luthadel. It is far too early to be worrying about expanding our influence. We cannot possibly authorize these preparations.
Oh, leave off, Penrod, Set snapped. You're not in charge of us.
All three men turned to Sazed. He felt very awkward, sitting at the head of the table in Keep Venture's conference room. Aides and attendants, including some of Doxson's bureaucrats, stood at the perimeter of the sparse room, but only the three rulers, now kings beneath Ellen's imperial rule, sat with Sazed at the table.
I think that we should not be hasty, Lord Set, Sazed said.
This isn't haste, Set said, pounding the table again. I just want to order scout and spy reports so that we can have information we need when we invade.
If we do invade, Gennaro said. If the Emperor decides to recover Fadrix City, it won't happen until this summer, at the very earliest. We have far more pressing concerns. My armies have been away from the Northern dominance for too long. It is basic political theory that we should stabilize what we have before we move into new territory.
Bah! Set said, waving an indifferent hand.
You may send your scouts, Lord Set, Sazed said, but they are to seek information only. They are to engage in no raids, no matter how tempting the opportunity.
Set shook a bearded head.
This is why I never bothered to play political games with the rest of the Final Empire. Nothing gets done because everyone is too busy scheming.
There is much to be said for subtlety, Lord Set, Penrod said. Patience brings the greater prize.
Greater prize? Set asked. What did the Central Dominance earn itself by waiting? You waited right up until the moment that your city fell. If you hadn't been the ones with the best Mistborn...
Best Mistborn, my lord? Sazed asked quietly. Did you not see her take command of the Kolos? Did you not see her leap across the sky like an arrow in flight? Lady Vin isn't simply the best Mistborn.
The group fell silent.
I have to keep them focused on her, Sazed thought. Without Vin's leadership, without the threat of her power, this coalition would dissolve in 3 heartbeats.
He felt so inadequate. He couldn't keep the men on topic, and he couldn't do much to help them with their various problems. He could just keep reminding them of Vin's power. The trouble was, he didn't really want to. He was feeling something very odd in himself,
feelings he usually didn't have. Disconcern? Apathy. Why did anything that these men talked about matter? Why did anything matter now that Tyndall was dead? He gritted his teeth, trying to force himself to focus.
"Very well," Set said, waving a hand. "I'll send the scouts. Has that food arrived from Urto yet, Janarl?"
The younger nobleman grew uncomfortable.
"We may have trouble with that, my lord. It seems that an unwholesome element has been rabble-rousing in the city." "No wonder you want to send troops back to the Northern Dominance," Set accused. "You're planning to conquer your kingdom back and leave mine to rot."
"Urto is much closer than your capital, Set," Janarl said, turning back to his tea. "It only makes sense to set me up there before we turn our attention westward."
"We will let the Empress make that decision," Penrod said.
He liked to act the mediator, and by doing so he made himself seem above the issues. In essence, he put himself in control by putting himself in between the other two.
"Not all that different from what Elend tried to do," Sazed thought, "with our armies."
The boy had more of a sense of political strategy than Tyndall had ever credited him with.
"I shouldn't think about her," he told himself, closing his eyes.
Yet it was hard not to. Everything Sazed did, everything he thought, seemed wrong because she was gone. Lights seemed dimmer. Motivations were more difficult to reach. He found that he had trouble even wanting to pay attention to the kings, let alone give them direction. It was foolish, he knew. How long had Tyndall been back in his life? Only a few months. Long ago he had resigned himself to the fact that he would never be loved, in general, and that he certainly would never have her love. Not only did he lack manhood, but he was a rebel and a dissident, a man well outside of the Terrace orthodoxy. Surely her love for him had been a miracle. Yet whom did he thank for that blessing, and whom did he curse for stealing her away? He knew of hundreds of gods. He would hate them all, if he thought it would do any good. For the sake of his own sanity, he forced himself to get distracted by the kings again.
"Listen,"
Penrod was saying, leaning forward, arms on the tabletop.
"I think we're looking at this the wrong way, gentlemen. We shouldn't be squabbling. We should be happy. We're in a very unique position. In the time since the Lord Ruler's empire fell, dozens, perhaps hundreds of men have tried to set themselves up as kings in various ways. The one thing they shared, however, was that they all lacked stability. Well, it appears that we are going to be forced to work together. I am starting to see this in a favorable light. I will give my allegiance to the Venture couple. I'll even live with Elend Venture's eccentric views of government, if it means that I'll still be in power 10 years from now."
Set scratched at his beard for a moment, then nodded.
"You make a good point, Penrod. Maybe the first good one I've ever heard out of you. But we can't continue trying to assume that we know what we are to do," Janarl said. "We need direction. Surviving the next 10 years, I suspect, is going to depend heavily on my not ending up dead on the end of that Mistborn girl's knife."
"Indeed," Penrod said, nodding curtly. "Master Terraceman, when can we expect the Empress to take command again?"
Once again, all three pairs of eyes turned to Sazed.
"I don't really care," Sazed thought, then immediately felt guilty. Vin was his friend. He did care, even if it was hard to care about anything for him.
He looked down in shame.
"Lady Vin is suffering greatly from the effects of an extended pewter drag," he said. "She pushed herself very hard this last year, and then ended it by running all the way back to Luthadel. She is in great need of rest. I think we should let her be for a time longer."
The others nodded, and returned to their discussion. Sazed's mind, however, turned to Vin. He'd understated her malady, and he was beginning to worry. A pewter drag drained the body, and he suspected that she'd been forcing herself to stay awake with the metal for months now. When a keeper stored up wakefulness, he slept as if in a coma for a time. He could only hope that the effects of such a terrible pewter drag were the same, for Vin hadn't awoken a single time since her return a week before. Perhaps she'd awake soon, like a keeper who came out of a sleep. Perhaps it would last longer. Her Kolos army waited outside the city, controlled, apparently, even though she was unconscious. But for how long? Pewter dragging could kill if the person had pushed themselves too hard. What would happen to the city if she never woke up? Ash was falling.
A lot of ash falls lately, Elend thought as he and Spook emerged from the trees and looked out over the Luthadel plain.
See, Spook said quietly, pointing. The city gates are broken.
Elend frowned.
But the Kolos are camped outside the city.
Indeed, Straff's army camp was also still there, right where it had been.
Work crews, Spook said, shading his face against the sunlight to protect his overly sensitive Allomancer's eyes. Looks like they're burying corpses outside the city.
Ellen's frown deepened.
Vin, what happened to her? Is she all right?
He and Spook had cut across country, taking a cue from the Terracemen, to make certain that they didn't get discovered by patrols from the city. Indeed, this day they'd broken their pattern, traveling a little bit during the day so that they could arrive at Luthadel just before nightfall. The mists would soon be coming, and Elend was fatigued, both from rising early and from walking so long. More than that, he was tired of not knowing what had happened to Luthadel.
"Can you see whose flag is set over the gates?" he asked.
Spook paused, apparently flaring his metals.
"Yours,"
he finally said, surprised. Elend smiled.
"Well, either they managed to save the city somehow, or this is a very elaborate trap to capture me."
"Come on," he said, pointing to a line of refugees who were being allowed back into the city, likely those who had fled before, returning for food now that the danger was past. "We'll mix with those and make our way in." Sazed sighed quietly, shutting the door to his room. The kings were finished with the day's arguments. Actually, they were starting to get along quite well, considering the fact that they'd all tried to conquer each other just a few weeks before. Sazed knew he could take no credit for their newfound amiability, however. He had other preoccupations.
"I've seen many die in my days," he thought, walking into the room. "Kelsier, Jaden Dwill, Krenda, people I respected. I never wondered what had happened to their spirits."
He set his candle on the table, the fragile light illuminating a few scattered pages, a pile of strange metal nails taken from Kolos bodies, and one manuscript. Sazed sat down at the table, fingers brushing the pages, remembering the days spent with Tyndall studying.
"Maybe this is why Vin put me in charge," he thought. "She knew I'd need something to take my mind off Tyndall."
And yet he was finding more and more that he didn't want to take his mind off her. Which was more potent, the pain of memory or the pain of forgetting? He was a keeper. It was his life's work to remember. Forgetting, even in the name of personal peace, was not something that appealed to him. He flipped through the manuscript, smiling fondly in the dark chamber. He'd sent a cleaned-up, rewritten version with Vin and Elend to the north. This, however, was the original, the frantically, almost desperately scribbled manuscript made by two frightened scholars. As he fingered the pages, the flickering candlelight revealed Tyndall's firm yet beautiful script. It mixed easily with paragraphs written in Sazed's own more reserved hand. At times, a page would alternate between their different hands a dozen different times. He didn't realize that he was crying until he blinked, sending loose a tear, which hit the page. He looked down, stunned as the bit of water caused a swirl in the ink.
"What now, Tyndall?" he whispered. "Why did we do this? You never believed in the Hero of Ages, and I never believed in anything, it appears. What was the point of all this?"
He reached up and dabbed the tear with his sleeve, preserving the page as best he could. Despite his tiredness, he began to read, selecting a random paragraph. He read to remember, to think of days when he hadn't worried about why they were studying. He had simply been content to do what he enjoyed best with the person he had come to love most.
"We gathered everything we could find on the Hero of Ages and the Deepness," he thought, reading. "But so much of it seems contradictory."
He flipped through to a particular section, one that Tyndall had insisted they include. It contained the several most blatant self-contradictions, as declared by Tyndall. He read them over, giving them fair consideration for the first time. This was Tyndall the Scholar, a cautious skeptic. He fingered through the passages, reading her script. "The Hero of Ages will be tall of stature," one read. "A man who cannot be ignored by others." "The power must not be taken," read another. "Of this we are certain. It must be held, but not used. It must be released." Tyndall had found that condition foolish, since other sections talked about the hero using the power to defeat the Deepness. "All men are selfish," read another. "The hero is a man who can see the needs of all beyond his own desires."
"If all men are selfish," Tyndall had asked, "then how can the hero be selfless, as is said in other passages? And indeed, how can a humble man be expected to conquer the world?"
Sayid shook his head, smiling. At times her objections had been very well conceived, but at other times she had just been struggling to offer up another opinion, no matter how much of a stretch it required. He ran his fingers across the page again, but paused on the first paragraph. "Tall of stature," it said. That wouldn't refer to Vin. It hadn't come from the rubbing, but another book. Tyndall had included it because the rubbing, the more trustworthy source, said he'd be short. Sayid flipped through the book to the complete transcription of Quan's iron plate testimony, searching for the passage. "Alendi's height struck me the first time I saw him," it read. "Here was a man who was small of stature, but who seemed to tower over others, a man who demanded respect." Sayid frowned. Before, he'd argued that there was no contradiction, for one passage could be interpreted as referring to the hero's presence or character, rather than just his physical height. Now, however, Sayid paused, really seeing Tyndall's objections for the first time. And something felt wrong to him. He looked back at his book, scanning the contents of the page. "There was a place for me in the lore of the Anticipation," he read. "I thought myself the holy first witness, the prophet foretold to discover the Hero of Ages. Renouncing Alendi then would have been to renounce my new position, my acceptance by the others." Sayid's frown deepened. He traced the paragraph. Outside it was growing dark, and a few trails of mist curled around the shutters, creeping into the room before vanishing. "Holy first witness," he read again.
"How did I miss that? It's the same name the people called me back at the gates. I didn't recognize it."
"Sayid?" Sayid jumped, nearly toppling his book to the floor as he turned. Vin stood behind him, a dark shadow in the poorly lit room.
"Lady Vin, you're up."
"You shouldn't have let me sleep so long," she said.
"We tried to wake you," he said softly. "You were in a coma."
She paused.
"Perhaps it is for the best, Lady Vin," Sayid said. "The fighting is done, and you pushed yourself hard these last few months. It is good for you to get some rest, now that this is over."
She stepped forward, shaking her head, and Sayid could see that she looked haggard despite her days of rest.
"No, Sayid," she said, "this is not over. Not by far."
"What do you mean?" Sayid asked, growing concerned.
"I can still hear it in my head," Vin said, raising a hand to her forehead. "It's here. In the city."
"The Well of Ascension?" Sayid asked. "But, Lady Vin, I lied about that. Truly,
and apologetically I don't even know if there is such a thing. Do you believe me to be the hero of ages?
Sazed looked away.
A few days ago, on the field outside the city, I felt certain. But, lately, I don't seem to know what I believe anymore. The prophecies and stories are a jumble of contradictions.
This isn't about prophecies, Vin said, walking over to his table and looking at his book.
This is about what needs to be done. I can feel it. Pulling me.
She glanced at the closed window with the mists curling at the edges. Then she walked over and threw the shutters open, letting in the cold winter air. Vin stood, closing her eyes and letting the mists wash over her. She wore only a simple shirt and trousers.
I drew upon it once, Sazed, she said. Do you know that? Did I tell you? When I fought the Lord Ruler, I drew power from the mists. That's how I defeated him.
Sazed shivered, not just from the cold, from the tone in her voice and the air of her words.
Lady Vin, he said, but wasn't sure how to continue. Drew upon the mists? What did she mean? The well is here, she repeated, looking out the window, mist curling into the room. It can't be, Lady Vin, Sazed said. All of the reports agree. The Well of Ascension was found in the Terrace Mountains.
Vin shook her head.
He changed the world, Sazed.
He paused, frowning.
What? The Lord Ruler, she whispered. He created the Ash Mounts. The records say he made the vast deserts around the Empire, that he broke the land in order to preserve it. Why should we assume that things look like they did when he first climbed to the well? He created mountains. Why couldn't he have flattened them?
Sazed felt a chill.
It's what I would do, Vin said. If I knew the power would return, if I wanted to preserve it, I'd hide the well. I'd let the legends remain, talking about mountains to the north.